I'm Susie Larson. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Susie Larson Live.
It's only just a matter of.
Welcome, welcome to Susie Larson Live. Always honored to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. Well, you know, if you listen often enough, we've talked numerous times on the show about how 2020 has impacted your soul. I think the condition of your soul is extremely important. We're going to talk today about how 2020 has impacted your relationships and even your perspective on what's going on in the world today and why we have reason for hope and a faith perspective. I'm so thrilled that Dr. John Townsend gets to join me again. Every time I get to talk with him, it's a better day for me. We're also going to draw from his incredible book, People Fuel, Fill Your Tank for Life, Love, and Leadership. We've had him on before to talk about it. It's an amazing book. Even if you don't see yourself as a leader, you are an influencer, and the book is filled with great content about how we connect with people, why we need each other, and maybe when a good boundary, a healthy boundary is called for. We've got 5 copies to give away. You can text the word book to get in on the drawing, 877-933-2484. But as always, I really want you to chime into the conversation. When you text in, I think honestly it's one of my love languages. So I want you to just text in, ask questions, comments. Tell me maybe if there's a relational issue that you've been bumping into because of the times that we're in, maybe about how to handle COVID or because of the elections or the civil unrest. You've got differing opinions from loved ones. How's that impacting you? I'd love to know. Quick announcement before we hear from Dr. Townsend. We are giving away a stack of copies of Max Licato's best-selling book, You Are Never Alone, Trust the Miracle of God's Presence. Had Max on recently to talk about that book. It's fantastic. If you want in on that drawing, you hop on our website, myfaithradio.com, and register to win. All right, let me tell you about my guest. We'll get him on the show. Dr. John Townsend's a nationally known leadership consultant, psychologist, New York Times best-selling author. Listen to this, selling over 10 million books. He's the founder of Townsend Institute for Leadership and Counseling. He and his wife Barbie live in Newport Beach, California. They have 2 adult sons, and we're always honored to get him on the show. Dr. Townsend, welcome back.
Good to be back, Susie.
Looking forward to the conversation. You've been on enough times, you know this. We love to start every day talking scripture, and I'm wondering if there's a passage you've been pondering these days.
Well, in my devotional this morning, as it goes, was Psalm 91, and where it says, "The very beginning, he who dwells in the shadow, with the Most High, will abide in the shadow of the Almighty." And what a verse of the fact that in chaotic times, when we can't see past the next day, that God is immutable and He loves us, and we're in His shadow,
and that we can rest there in the time of chaos. Amazing, amazing. Well, just from a 30,000-foot view before we kind of get into some of the more detailed accounts of what's going on today, give me your take on the times that we're in, what you're seeing, and your perspective on it all.
Well, it's not good on the human perspective. The thing that I'm noticing that I get the calls about to go talk to businesses or corporations or churches or whatever is that people are suffering from a lot of what you would call dysregulation. Now, as you know, a lot of what I study is neuroscience because the science ties in with the Bible and it supports what the Bible says. And so the science Bible thing is working. And we find out that the way we operate well is, you know, you can be rational, you can make plans, you can handle things and be resilient. That's regulation. But when times of COVID, in times of economic disaster, in times of racial issues, in times of political unrest, we go into what's called dysregulation, where you get overwhelmed easily, you can't think straight, you get more relational conflicts, you're more irritable, you have moody problems, and you can't persevere. And so many people, as well as the people they're working with, are more dysregulated than regulated. So that's what I work a lot with, especially with leaders.
Wow. You know, the number of things we can talk about today, but I want to start here talking about the dividing lines many people are drawing over political issues. And I've seen Christians that I know online who were at one time marked by humility and deference getting into absolute heated accusatory debates and posting things like this: "I'm willing to divide with you on this issue." and that issue being who you think should be president. And, you know, this is just my opinion, but I say when we're more acquainted with our political ideologies than we are with the biblical call to walk in humility and love and concern for those with whom we disagree, we kind of lost our way. But I'd love to know just your professional and your faith perspective on all of that.
Well, I can tell you what I tell people who come to me with that and say, why aren't we talking to each other? You know, in my church, we disagree on politics or we disagree on COVID, not in my church, but in churches that I'm around. And they'll say, and people are saying, well, maybe you're not saved if you disagree with me. I mean, crazy stuff. So I came up with a protocol to help the leaders of those churches and organizations. I said, here's what you got to lay down. You got to say, we're going to talk about these issues. However, as with any kind of talk, we have a ground rule. Every good talk should have a ground rule. And here's the ground rule. You cannot put out your position until you can paraphrase to the other person that you understand their position that they've articulated to their satisfaction. So if they say, COVID is a conspiracy that came up from Mars and the Martians brought it to us and it doesn't really exist, I can't tell you that I disagree until I can say, let me see if I understand this. You're saying it's from Mars and there's a conspiracy and it really doesn't exist and it affects humans. Now, the person says, yeah, you get it. That gives me permission to give you my viewpoint. And if I say, well, my position is that we're all going to die of COVID in a year. It's going to end the human race. You can't disagree until you say, let me see if I understand you. You say it's going to end it for all of us, and it's kind of like the worst than the black plague ever was. Yes, I understand. The ground rule is you don't speak up until you have successfully articulated the other person's point of view. And if you can't do that, let's just talk about the World Series.
Interesting. Well, I wanted to ask you, how we got to this place. Is this due to the accumulative effect of isolation and unresolved issues? Because I do think, you and I have talked about this in years past, too, we have an uncanny ability to treat symptoms and to ignore issues. And I think when you have this accumulative impact of unresolved issues, fears, hurts, and that affects your filter, and then you combine that with isolation and world crises, how are you not going to blow up and lose perspective? Just, again, I'm a layperson, so I would love your professional perspective.
Yeah, Susie, the brain requires two things to be really healthy and to be malleable and to bounce back. It requires two things. One is it requires relationship. You mentioned isolation. When we're around people that get us, that understand us, they can get in what I call the well of pain with us, and they're for us. Like Job's friends, the only good thing that Job's friends did in chapter 2 is it said they sat with him 7 days and 7 nights and did not speak a word to him, for they knew his pain was very great. When you got people who can go there with you, you relax and your brain says, okay, I can be calm. We're losing that. We're isolated. The second thing is structure. When COVID first hit, Susie, I went to the research and found out that people were all of a sudden walking around in their sad gray yoga pants, walking into walls and watching Netflix at 3 a.m., and there was no structure to life. There was no night, no day, and the brain craves structure, some kind of order, not some obsessive, rigid schedule, but predictability. When do you work out? When do you eat? When do you play with your kids? When do you lead your team? All this stuff, and we've lost that, too. We've had to rebuild that. So what's contributing to all of the depression, the anxiety, the polarization, the drug abuse, the porn, the marriage problems has to do with a loss of connection, which is the isolation, and a loss of structure, which is chaos.
Wow. And so somebody is, still quarantined to home. They're working at home remotely, and they were used to going to work every day, getting dressed up to go to work every day, connecting with people. What are some remedies for just at home to create some structure within their home office so that at least they can feel like they've got some traction?
Yeah, I have three things that I train people in. Number one, you got to have a to-do list, not like minute by minute because that drives anybody crazy. But you need to know before the next day what are the things you've got to get done and what time the meetings are. And the brain goes, oh, there's a predictability. So you got to create the to-do list. It could be an app. It could be a calendar. Secondly, you've got to tie the to-do list into meaning. God made us to understand purpose. What am I doing? How does my to-do list, is it just busy work, or does it tie in with the vision I have for my company, the vision I have for my family, the vision I have for my church? tie in the to-do list with, I'm doing these seven things today because they have a good end and a big, big purpose for me that God wants. So his purpose is the second thing. And the third thing is accountability. It's to say to a few people who are nice, that care about you, can you just check on, see if I'm keeping my life structure going, because I've been spinning my wheels, and have them just text you a couple times a week. How's the life structure going? You feel like you're being productive. When you know somebody is kind to you, not like a mean Uber coach type that says, you know, drop down and give me 50, not that type of thing, but just sort of like, hey, it's Tuesday, just want to see how it's going. Do you feel like you're on schedule? Your brain goes, thank you, somebody cares about me. Those three make a big difference, Susie.
Wow, interesting. It is interesting. I'm sure you've heard the same, where some have leveraged this time for all it's worth. I mean, some have been thrown into utter chaos. They've lost their jobs or they've been sick. And, that's a whole different scenario. But I'm saying for those who've just have been put in quarantine, and so their schedule and their location and all of that have changed, some have leveraged it in a way to say, I'm digging deeper. I'm spending more time with God. I'm going to engage in some deeper disciplines physically. And others have said, you know what, all the structure has gone out the window. I've gained 20 pounds. I feel like I've lost my vision. But it's like, no matter where you find yourself today, as we get ready to go to break here, today's a new day, and you can maybe implement some structure and make some meaningful connections. I'm talking to Dr. John Townsend. His book is titled People Fuel, and this is what he writes. When you care about someone, you want to be able to disagree, argue in healthy ways, solve problems, make decisions, and get back to love and connection. When that can't happen, we feel disconnected, alone, frustrated, and sad. So when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about how to navigate some of these, how are these conversations, relationships have shifted because so much has shifted around us. Talking to Dr. John Townsend, we welcome questions, comments. If you want in on the drawing for his book, text the word book to 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a minute. God doesn't want us to live in fear and anxiety and constant reaction to the noise around us. He wants to live in rhythm, rhythms of rest and work and in response to what he's telling us. Thanks for tuning in to Susie Larson Live, talking to our friend Dr. John Townsend, who's written a lot of books. We're talking about 2020, its impact on our relationships and our capacity to process what's going on around us. And right now we're talking about just how isolation has impacted us. Some of the political divide has impacted our relationships. I want to read this again from John's book, People Fuel. And by the way, we've got five copies to give away. It's just a wealth of knowledge for navigating relationships. You can text the word book to 877-933-2484 to get in on the drawing. So here's what John writes. When you care about someone, you want to be able to disagree, argue in healthy ways, solve problems, make decisions, and get back to love and connection. When that can't happen, we feel disconnected, alone, frustrated, and sad. This is so powerful, John, but I want to say, though, how things have changed. This is a cancel culture. This is a ready, shoot, aim culture. And people, the civility of discussion and getting back to love connection is just becoming such a rare thing. This is countercultural, is what I'm saying. But it's still true. So speak to it and those listening today and how to navigate some of these relationships and conversations.
Yeah, for some people that aren't that severe in their polarization, all you have to do with some people, when you notice that you have a different opinion, if it's on politics or if it's where you want to eat lunch or whatever, and that they react to it, is to really be inquisitive about it, Susie, is to say, excuse me, I know I disagree with you about that aspect. Are we still connected? Are we still friends? Now, a lot of times a person who's not really severely disturbed or crazy will go, yeah, it just kind of triggers me. And you just reassure them, well, I get it. And I would never want to trigger you. Would you rather me change the subject, or do you think we can still stay friends and stay connected? It's the awareness when they go, you know, I'm really being an idiot here. If they're not really severe, they'll kind of go, you know, we are friends. We know each other 10 years. Sure, we can agree to disagree. Now, if the person is more, let's say, polarized, you may have to be a little stronger with them and say something like, we're really going to have to change the subject if we can't stay friends, because I don't have these arguments with people that I care about and lose a relationship. And if they just start ranting and raving, that's where the boundaries come. And you say, I'm changing the subject now. Let me know when you want to be kind and respectful. And they keep ranting and raving. Well, that's when I have to say, sorry, we'll talk later, get off the phone, walk out the door. There are some people that the only thing that works with them is to say, we don't really talk unless there's respect. And then you have to prove it.
Mm. All right. Well, you talk in this book and other books as well, the importance of being surrounded by some safe people. And again, Dr. Townsend, I'm hearing so many stories about really significant shifts in once very trusted relationships. So this is that. I love the tools you just offered us there. And if, let's say that some of your closest friends are suddenly now you're in constant, you feel like there's just, you're chafing constantly. Something has shifted there. Talk about the need and the importance of cultivating safe and healthy relationships and maybe being open to going, I'm not going to cut this friendship out of my life. Maybe it's a different sphere, a different way that we relate now. And how do we discern what that should look like?
Yeah, I talk in the book about the concept of a life team. And a life team is 3 to 10 people that know it all about you, love you anyway, are willing to grow with you and tell each other the truth. They're growth people. They know everything. They can be vulnerable with you. And also, truth is okay. And some people say, I don't have anybody like that. Or that's just the Lord. And I say, yeah, that's the way the Lord is. But the Lord tells us to get those people too. You know, it's not good that we be alone. And woe to you if you fall and nothing. There's not another to lift you up in Ecclesiastes. So everybody needs somebody besides God and their spouse and their Labrador Retriever, Max. Because we all think, well, I pray a lot, and my spouse hears all my fears and my concerns, and Max licks me and makes me feel good no matter what. Well, let's break that down. God does that because he's God, but that's what I call the vertical aspect of our faith. It's the spiritual aspect. But then God also has hundreds of passages about the horizontal version where we need people. But some people say, yeah, that's my spouse. Well, your spouse is overwhelmed if she or he is the only human being that understands your fears and your needs. You got to spread that out. And Max is genetically engineered to lick you because he won't eat lunch otherwise. So that's kind of a dunk. So you have to find people. And sometimes you have to go to your normal list and say the following. You know, I'm really getting into self-improvement during these awful days, and I want to be a better person. And I'd like to start having a few relationships in your person. I like your faith. I like your personality. I like the way we look at life. I'd like to be able to go deeper, but it's going to involve being able to respectfully have disagreements between each other. And when I do this with a CEO, Susie, they come back and they'll say, I could not believe it. People said, sign me up. I've got nobody like that. People are dying for what the Bible calls a grace and truth relationship.
Wow, that's fantastic. You said this, we are happiest when we know our lives revolve around people. Conversely, we're not ourselves, not our best selves when we are isolated and alone. And, you know, just to add the spiritual warfare component, the enemy has had a heyday with this isolation, just with the compound issues that are in our culture today. We have a very real enemy. You think about the isolation, and then you've got all of these crises that we're kind of forced to process. And then you add to that, Dr. Townsend, I think it's something that it's like we're how do I want to say this? It's almost like we're developing a habit of isolation where it's just becoming easier to stay home. You know, you could go to your local shop and support it and get a little something there to help them with their business. You could maybe meet with someone in an outdoor restaurant, just make some effort. But it seems we've almost developed a habit of isolation. What do you think of that?
We have, but I'm a proponent also of making deep connections digitally. And I developed this over a few months ago when COVID hit and people were saying, gosh, I can't be face-to-face, so it's no good. I'm isolated. I started studying it, and I realized something. I told people, look, my favorite meal in the whole world is a medium-rare, dry-aged ribeye steak. If my doctor said I could do it, I would eat it 3 times a day for every day of my life. I would just, that's just nirvana for me. It's the best. And I said, now I like a good hamburger. I like a good medium juicy hamburger. That's fine. It's not a ribeye, but I like it. Now, if I took both of those to a molecular biologist and I said, you know, what's in there? And analyzed them the way that smart people do. She would come back and say, well, they both have a certain amount of protein, certain amount of carbohydrates, certain amount of fat, vitamins, minerals. And basically, there's some range that she'd say, they're kind of the same thing. And once you've eaten them, your body doesn't know the difference, and it uses it to build up bones and heal things and make you stronger and make your organs healthy and give you energy. Your body doesn't know, but you know in your taste buds. And the point that I've discovered was it's the same way in the virtual world of digital zooming and phone and all that, text versus face-to-face. God made the face-to-face, it's the ribeye. There's nothing better than that. He made it that way. That's the best way to connect. It's the highest quality. But it doesn't mean you're going to be disconnected when you are vulnerable with somebody in a text or in a Zoom or a phone call, because you're still transferring the nutrients of love and belief in you and affirmation and wisdom and challenge. And so my mantra to people is, I know it's not the best, but don't dismiss the burger during these times. It's a pretty good burger.
That is fantastic. That is fantastic. How have you found for yourself, just your own personal connections, what has been the best way for you to connect and stay nourished and strengthened with some of your team people?
Well, since it is more virtual, and in the work I do, you know, when I'm talking to people around the world and I can't fly there as much, I'm doing a lot more of that. I've found that it's fine as long – you have to put more energy and structure into it. It can't be kind of the drop-in, hey, what's going on, let's go do whatever. You do have to be more planned. And I do miss the spontaneity, but in terms of me and my team feeling good, feeling creative, having good ideas, persevering, solving problems, we haven't missed a lick.
Wow, that's fantastic. I don't know if you know, but in the Midwest here in Minnesota, we've got – 6-foot snowmen already. Can you believe that? We've been dumped on so much snow.
Oh,
it's hard to believe. When it starts in October, it's like this is like we're looking at 8 to 9 months of winter. But I will say prior to that, though, we could be outdoors. So my three gals and I that meet once a month, we just would be outside and we would light candles and we would have a meal. And we'd just have our little bit of a distancing and we'd have our Bibles and our journals and we just start to share what God's been showing us. And it is the richest thing ever. So now we're going to move to Zoom because it's so cold out and a couple of them are real nervous about being in a home together. So, we, you know, we just honor that and it's been great.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I do a lot of group teams and, you know, either family groups, meetings with families I work with or churches or corporations. And the resolution of the Zooms or whatever we use is so good now. I'll have somebody who's, say, in Venezuela talking about somebody, and another person in Manhattan is on the same thing. And the person in Venezuela will say, Sam, I just noticed when I said that thing about my dad, I just noticed your face kind of changed. And Manhattan will say, yeah, I'm surprised you saw that. You say, well, your eyes kind of shifted. Yeah, it reminded me of some sad things that I was dealing with my father on. I'm talking about a deep personal connection because the resolution, the audio are so good. You can pick up micro muscle twitches in a person's face, the glisten of a person's eye. It's when they're upset, when they shut down and they're getting and inside themselves, you can see that too. So if you pay attention, the information's there.
That's so good. So I want to know from you, listener, dear listener, how are you connecting? What are some of the best ways you found to stay connected, to take initiative to connect? And when I was talking about the habit of isolation, I just think it gets easier to not. But don't do that. Rise up, right? You need people. They need you. Talking to Dr. John Townsend about how to navigate 2020 relationally. We'd love to hear from you as well. And we will be back in a moment. That song play out. Thanks for tuning into Suzy Larson Live. Talking to Dr. John Townsend, best-selling author, leadership consultant, friend of the show. And we're drawing from his book a little bit, People Fuel, Fill Your Tank for Life, Love, and Leadership. And again, even if you don't see yourself as a leader, there's great, great content in here for navigating relationships. We've got 5 copies to give away. You can text the word book to 877-933-2484. We're talking a lot about 2020, its impact on how we navigate our relationships, our differences, differences, our faith perspective on what's happening today. Let's talk about the pandemic for a moment and its impact on relationships. You know, there's a politicization around this virus, but that maybe that's for another day. But there are different levels of fear and care and suspicion around the virus, as you said at the open. And with the holidays coming up, what might healthy boundaries and communication look like? Because some are very fearful and others are flippant, and we can run over each other if we're not careful. So what do you say?
Yeah, everybody has got what I call the fear-risk ratio. Some people are way into the risk, like, you know, it's not that big a deal. It's just I'll be coughing a couple of days. And so they're big on risk and very low on fear, sometimes to the point of, you know, not having good judgment. And on the other end of the continuum, there are people that are paralyzed with fear and, you know, haven't walked outside a building for months for any reason whatsoever. Everybody's on that. And when you're prepared for the holidays and you want to be with people you care about, you really have to get, basically, you have to poll people and say, you know, you're important to me, so where are you on this? And, you know, are you always a six-footer? Are you always mask indoors, mask outdoors, and these sorts of things? And I tend to tell people it's really, I think, smartest to defer as much as possible to the most vulnerable person, because the most vulnerable person is the person that's going to be more hurt. Now, that doesn't mean that if you've got somebody who's, like, has to be hospitalized because they can't move and out of fear, well, that's a different matter. But kind of cater to the person that's the more afraid and respect that. And I think that's what kindness is. But get the poll done on where you are and what the limits are so that you don't have the big fights that happen anyway a lot of times in the holidays, because it's a more stressful time. You've got to be the one, if you're going to be the host, to kind of get the conversation going and where can everybody meet in the middle. Then you save so many awful moments of angst at the event itself.
Very good. So let's talk. I mean, you've touched on this, but I want to dig in a little bit deeper on what's not helpful. And I made a few bullets here. One is condescending toward another's attitude, and two is dismissing another's fears and just doing what you want to do. Again, that those seem obvious, but those things are already happening. I mean, I'm hearing stories of that. This is nothing. And each of those kinds of things wounds the relationship. And because it seems that nerves are kind of hyper-exposed and temperaments are on high alert, boy, this is a time for kindness and humility and not making it a political or social issue, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a technique that I train people in. I call it having a conversation about the conversation that really, really helps, because we're so used to, once we get into whatever it is, what you call the content issue. COVID is content issue. Families are content issue. Politics are content issue. It's to go in and say, can I talk about talking? That's having the conversation about the conversation. Well, what do you mean talk about talking? I'd like some really good, cool, normal ground rules for how we can have this. If and it's kind of what we started the show with, is to start the conversation with, I'd love to talk about the tough things, but I don't do, you know, polarizing, yelling and screaming and talking over each other. And if we can do that, I'd love to. And if you begin talking about, people calm down and they think, you know, I really care about this person. And there is room for disagreement, and only the severely disturbed ones are the ones that can't handle that. So you're better shape when you have a conversation about the conversation.
Boy, that's so good. Another one that I just hear about is getting offended by the other person's differing opinion and then using it as a reason to break fellowship. And how sad for that, because it feels like this is a powerful opportunity to build a bridge. I mean, families and friends, we need to be building bridges, because the world needs bridge building. If we can't do it on a very immediate level as Christians, I mean, who can?
You know, the problem there, Susie, is that a lot of people think that understanding means agreement. So if I really try to understand you, I must be giving up my point of view and agreeing with you, and I can't have that because it's a moral issue, it's a right and wrong issue, you got to be on principle. Understanding just means understanding, like Jesus talked about, love each other like you like to be loved. And so when you can separate the two words, I'm just understanding, but I can have my point of view, everything changes. Do not put those two things together.
Boy, that's really good. Here's another quote from People Fuel. Grace helps us feel loved and connected, helps us tolerate our own failure and that of others, and strengthens us to fight another day. God provides us with grace vertically, directly from himself, and horizontally, indirectly through people. Again, Dr. Townsend, this feels like such a potent truth and a lost art, you know, offering grace, offering understanding, being humble about our own failures. Speak to that a little bit more, if you would.
Well, it's funny. When you study people that have loyal relationships, like there's these studies about leaders that have loyal people that would never leave, that walk over hot coals, or family members that they just love to be around them. They measured two kinds of people. One was the bulletproof person, like Superman or Wonder Woman. Bullets fly off their chest, and they're perfect, and they're ideal, and all this. And they measured them against leaders and parents who were more vulnerable and would say, I've made a mistake here. I'm struggling here. I screwed up here. And you would think intuitively, well, everybody wants to follow the parent or the authority or the leader who has got it all together. That's who we aspire to be. But the research says nothing is could be further from the truth. People are loyal to go any kind of length to be with the vulnerable person because they can identify with them. Oh, they're like me. They have a hard time sometimes in their marriage, or they make mistakes and they admit it. That's what I'm like. I can't identify with Wonder Woman. She comes from some island in the Pacific, and Superman lives on Krypton. I can't identify with that. And it takes us back to the book of Hebrews, where it says that Jesus suffered in all things as we did, yet without sin. We have a faith that says that we don't have to become perfect like God. God came down so we could identify with him and he with us. So grace is just about saying, here's who I am, and here's my foibles, and I hope you can accept me. People love that. There's a phrase I use is that God wants us to be fully loved and fully known. And if you want to be loved, you've got to be known, and that means people have got to know the negatives. If you're halfway known because you hide yourself, then you're halfway loved. And I want to be loved as much as I can, but then I've got to be open and vulnerable to get the love I need.
Boy, that's so, so good. Let's talk about another, a few other issues, I should say. Racism, civil unrest, fear, and the significantly differing ideas and what our country needs in order to heal. And, you know, again, here's just my opinion, but it seems that each of us needs to admit that we don't know what we don't know, that there are things we don't understand because we haven't walked in somebody's shoes, and we have all blind spots, all of us do, that we just can't see. So maybe start there. I'm going to ask you in a moment to get different people in a room that differ on these topics and what you would say to them to help the healing process begin. But just give me your take and your feel on some of this stuff that we've been seeing in our culture.
Well, I had to go through an pretty intense education on this when the George Floyd murder happened. I went to all the research because everybody was saying, no, well, you know, the way we got to do this is the whites need to tell their point of view to the blacks. Blacks need to tell their point of view to the whites. And the more I studied that, I thought, nope, that's not going to fix this. So I did a bunch of shows on my online show where I just said, I think that me, a white guy, and my white audience, we need to first let the blacks go and tell their story without saying, well, you got to hear my point of view. I think the more vulnerable, which because of everything that's represented in the George Floyd issue, I think the more vulnerable population needs to have their say first. And we did it. And for several shows, I just said, we just want to listen. We're learning. And I learned so much about what we're missing, kind of by inactivity, by not knowing, by not having the information. So my stance now is the more vulnerable get to talk first.
I love that we did the same thing and how important it is. And that's, again, what we don't know what we don't know. We haven't walked a mile in their shoes. Right. And yet you see people on both sides of the conversation as far as what is the answer, where some are saying civil unrest is the only way to get the attention and kind of praising that. Others are going, I don't want my city burnt down, but I really want to heal this great divide. And our country has not only a deep scar, but a deep wound, because it's not healed, of racism. It's real. And so if you were to get people that are kind of heated in each of these realms of perspective, all in a room and they represented the rest of the population, what first steps would you take to help these people heal so that the nation could heal?
First thing I would do would be some example of my ground rule of you don't talk until they can say that they've been heard. You know, when we think I'm a good listener, well, how do you know you're a good listener? If you just think you are, the other person goes, no, you're not getting it. You're throwing your darts against the empathy dartboard. You may be on the wrong wall, but it's not until in the meetings I had, it's not until the black person says, okay, you got it. But if they go, nope, didn't get it. You try again. And finally you say, maybe it was, so do you do feel like when your kids were little, they were starting to drive and you had to train your kids, your black son to put their hands at 10 and 2 when they're on the steering wheel when they're pulled over and not look back or forward, look straight ahead, say yes, sir. I didn't train my kids that way. I'm white. When my kids were driving, well, I didn't train that way if they get pulled over. But my black friend told me that, and I said, let me make sure you were terrified and there was a system that was working against you and your kids were scared. He goes, okay, you got it. Then it was my turn. But not until the other person says you get it, do you have permission to say that point of view.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, we've heard exactly that same thing, exactly. Heartbreaking. What would you say? Oh, I guess you've said it. I mean, even to those who are listening, that we need to listen. We need to give feedback as far as this is what I've heard you say. Let's start there. Start by listening and start by reflecting back. This is what I've heard you say. That's really powerful. Well, you've written in a number of your books, I see it's time for me to break. When we come back, let's talk about the power and the importance of forgiveness. I mean, you're an expert on relationships, and forgiveness is such a key aspect to the journey. Love for you to talk about that. And you even say forgiveness can be energizing. We'll talk more about that as well. Talking to Dr. John Townsend. One of the books that we're drawing from today is People Fuel, and we've got 5 copies to give away. We'd love to get one in your hands. If you want to enter the drawing, just text the word book to 877-933-2484. If you've got questions, send those in a separate text, and we'll be back in a minute. Thanks so much for tuning into Suzy Larson Live, talking to Dr. John Townsend. We're talking about just how 2020 has impacted our relationships, how we relate to one another, especially with such stark differences of opinion. In fact, Terry just wrote in and says, if only Dr. John could have been asked to offer his expertise to the participants of tonight's presidential debate. Terry, you're brilliant. So let's just have you do that, Dr. John. Offer your expertise. If you could talk to both candidates, what would you say?
I would say a couple of things. I would say I think you both of you guys, you know, respectfully, need to understand the gravity of what we're dealing with here. That your decisions and the decisions of the electorate are going to change families, generations, millions of people's entire lives. So because of that, I need for you to think about them and their welfare as number one, and it's not about you. It's not about winning. You want to win, no problem winning. But what's bigger is what's best for everybody. I would basically encourage them to be transcendent and think of the larger purpose.
Boy, that's fantastic. Wow. Wow, wow. All right. So we talked a little bit, we teed up, I should say, the topic of forgiveness. And you even say in one of your books that forgiveness is actually energizing. We could probably do a whole show on forgiveness, Doc, but speak to that if you would.
Well, the reason that, I mean, there's the spiritual aspect, the psychological part, but the reason that forgiveness is good is it's not for the person that hurt us. People always think, well, if I forgive them, they're off the hook and they need to be in jail or apologize or pay back or whatever. And that's, I understand the justice issue. But forgiveness makes us healthier because to the extent that you forgive is the extent that you give control of your life back to you and not them. The person you have not forgiven is still in your head, your mind. You had dreams about them. You transfer them onto other people. You talk about it to your friends. You have arguments in your head about all the bad things they did. How many sleepless nights do people have with those people they haven't forgiven? They're still having the argument. They're driving the car of your decisions, as opposed to, you know, I let them go. I said I forgive you. I grieved it. I felt bad, and now I'm free. I want to be in control of my decisions, and if I haven't forgiven, that person controls me.
Well, let's talk about the potential of forgiving one of the presidential candidates, forgiving a political party that you vehemently disagree with. I mean, people may not even occur to them, but the thing is, a root of bitterness can spring up and defile many, even if you don't know the person. You can rehash, you can rehearse to the point where you're bitter. And I would love for you to speak to that process. I was hanging around in Psalm 37 this morning, and it talks about don't fret. Don't worry about the wicked who prosper in their way. Don't fret over their evil schemes. You know, Psalm 37 is amazing. It talks about delight in the Lord. Walk humbly with him, and you will inherit the land. Maybe, friend, listening today, maybe it's just jumped out at me the whole chapter this morning, but I digress. Back to this, though. Speak to that, if you would. When someone's harboring something in their heart towards someone they don't even know, it may not even occur to them, I've got some forgiving or at least processing to do.
Mm-hmm. I just tell people it's a very simple technique that really helps. You get a piece of paper out and you write down the offense, because technically the word forgive means to cancel an offense. So somebody owes you something, and there's got to be an offense to be canceled. So you got to write out what that political party did to hurt you. Maybe they threaten your way of life, or they threaten your values or whatever. You got to write it down, because the brain comes alive when you write something down. You don't just do it in your head. Secondly, you write down not only the offense, but what has impact been on you? Well, it's causing me money, or it's causing me, maybe my church is going to shut down or whatever. So now you got the fact of what you've been offended by. Secondly, the impact on you. And the third thing you do is you say, you're free. You go your way. I'm not going to try to control you. I'm releasing you, and it's now sort of between you and God, and not you and me. And that's a tremendously freeing sense to go, I just hand them over to somebody that's bigger than I am. It's a lot of freedom in that.
And wow, I mean, that is something I would say that's called for before Election Day, wouldn't you? I mean, because it really does speak to, if I can't let go, if I can't process this in a way to get my heart back to a good place, it must speak to the fact that I'm hoping more in man and institutions of men than I am in God. Not to say it doesn't matter, your votes matter, your convictions matter, but I just always have to go back to the heart. What's going on in our hearts? This is something we can and probably should process sooner than later, right?
Absolutely. The more we process this in healthy ways, like I meet with my men's group this coming week, and we're going to be talking about some of this, then the better, whatever the outcome is, we'll be able to handle it. We can certainly feel sad or glad, whichever end we're on, but then we'll have a plan in mind. It's the people that get surprised at the end that go to what I call a permanent protest mode. And they're always unhappy. They're always cranky, and they can't even do anything about it. You don't want to live like
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm. And when you let your heart get to that place, you really do, your lens is skewed, and you start to assign motive, you know, even motives that aren't there, and assume you believe the worst, not the best. And then again, you lose perspective, because it's like your side's always right, their side's always wrong. And there's something wrong with that for the believer. We somehow have got to get to a better place. And you even say forgiveness is not the same as healing. And I think if we confuse those two things, we often get ourselves in trouble as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, forgiveness opens the door to healing. Forgiveness says, okay, somebody wounded me emotionally, or they wounded me verbally, or they wounded me physically. I got an owie, and I got to take that owie to go to a good church, a good counselor, a good therapist, or whatever. So never, never think, well, just because I forgave them that their impact's taken care of. No, you just open the door, and they get on the operating table.
Wow. Talk about the importance of celebration. I know that seems like a hard turn, but you do talk about celebrating small wins, celebrating victories, looking for the wins in your day. And again, I say that because it's the sense is that we're white knuckling, hanging on, holding on and holding our breath. But we can't do that. We can live a better way even today.
Yeah, well, let's go to Acts where Paul and Silas are sitting there, and they're in chains. They're in prison, and they're singing hymns, and the world changes, right? So they wow. found something to be happy about even when they were in an awful, awful, awful situation. We know from the neuroscience that the same thing holds, is that when people can intentionally – you have to be intentional, but especially when you're suffering and life is hard, you've got to intentionally every day think of one thing at least – that you're grateful for. Maybe your kid came home with a good grade, or maybe somebody said nice work or whatever. It releases all of these wonderful, happy cuddle hormones, you know, oxytocin, these sorts of things. Celebration makes the brain happy, which then helps us to calm down, which then helps us to function and parent and work better.
Boy, that's so good. Talk about what you've learned, brain science, as it relates to hope and gratitude.
Yeah, basically there's an entire science of hope now that if people can see a realistic positive thing, now I'm not talking about pie in the sky, like, you know, I don't hope that I'll be an NFL player because that's hopeless to me even to think that, right? But a hope that has some reality to it, people will hang on, they'll persevere, they'll do hard things because the hope's in front of them. Hope's about the future, and realistic hope can keep you going a lot further. But you've got to have The key there is you've got to have people hoping with you. You can't do that alone.
Mm-hmm. Another thing you write about in People Fuel that I think we could start applying today is the power of sincere compliments. Not flattery, but sincere compliments. I love that you've studied that extensively. Say more.
Well, you know, I'm starting to fly now more after COVID. Not after COVID, but I'm flying more. And you know, they say at TSA, you know, if you see it, say it. So if there's like a black bag in the middle of the hallway and it's ticking, you probably ought to go tell somebody. and the same thing is true about authentic compliments or affirmations, is when you notice something somebody does and you spontaneously say, great job on the report, or you really stuck with that, and that was a really hard customer and you dealt with it, or, you know, I know you don't like math, and here you are, you finished, or you were so kind to your sister, or whatever. And it's sort of that in the moment, what we call in leadership walk around management. You're just walking around life with people. The first thing they do is, are you an alien? What? I mean, you notice something, and they feel shocked. And then all of a sudden they feel appreciated, and you've kind of just made their day. We found out that those spontaneous observations you make are – we'll change everything with a person. But the key is you've got to be looking for them. You've got to be watching for them. And you shouldn't be complimenting things that aren't about their character. Like, so to tell your daughter, well, you could be a model. Look how pretty your hair is. That's nice. But if you're not telling her you're kind to your friends, I love how you solve problems, you do hard things, when you compliment the interior part of the person, it'll last forever.
Boy, that's so good. What about this? Just got about a minute and a half, couple minutes left, I should say. What do you know about God now, Dr. Townsend, that you didn't know even a handful of years ago?
That I have underestimated the enormousness of his grace. I always knew he was the God of truth. This is kind of my own journey. But in the last few years of life, I've seen he's so truthful and he's so much into righteousness, but his grace is so much more enormous than that, and that frees everything up.
Just the break in your voice makes me want to break down and cry because it's so true. And I've really noticed that same thing. I think when we see him face to face, we'll be undone by the amount of grace he'd been pouring on us day after day. And Dr. Townsend, we just love and appreciate you so much. And I know you're so busy that you would give us your time. It means just the world to me. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Susie. It was really good talking to you.
You as well. You can check out Dr. Townsend's book, People Fuel, Fill Your Tank for Life, Love, and Leadership. We'll leave the drawing open for a little bit longer if you'd like to get in. Just text the word book to 877-933-2484. If you're new to Faith Radio, that will just kick back a link. It'll just take you a second to fill out the form for the entry. We do that because we just don't have the manpower to be able to enter everybody's addresses with all the books we want to give away every day. So I hope you found some encouragement here today, and we will meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Suzy Larson Live. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can become a supporter now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of the show. Also, if you would, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player, and never miss a show.